Hey, I'm Matt Gleb. Welcome to this episode on Must Increase.
Well, hey there. Yes, this is the Must Increase podcast. And as you heard, we are going to be joined again by Matt Gleb. But before we start today's episode, I want to remind you, make sure that you are subscribed, following all that good stuff, YouTube and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the different places that you could be listening or watching. And just get subscribed, all that good stuff. This is the Must Increase podcast where we look to increase what I was saying is we're looking to increase truth and inspire hope in the lives of your church, your business, your family, and more. And yes, I am joined today by who has been a now four-time guest slash co-host, Matt Gleb. So Matt, welcome back to the podcast.
Veteran is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. Veteran is a great word. Yeah, it's a great way to describe it.
This was the last thing I wanted on my resume, podcaster. And so we're done.
Yeah.
Just looking for the royalties.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They'll start rolling in. But usually it takes a good, 48 months or so for you to start seeing any of that residual income. So
how long have you been doing episodes?
I think 4 years or something like that. I think so.
48.
So, oh, yeah. I'm racking in big money. You know it. It's wild. So,
I'll take whatever.
It's fine. Yeah, it's happening. No, I mean, you were actually, when I first asked you, not to embarrass you, but I'm going you were like, oh, I don't know if I could do this podcast thing. But no, I gotta say, man, you've done well. You've been a great addition to the episodes that you've contributed to. So you're doing well, and I thank you for your generosity of giving of your time to serve our audience. So thank you, Matt Gleb.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. You're the only one brave enough to give me liberty to speak my mind. Everywhere else I'm muzzled. At the church, at the house, at the courthouse. Mm.
Well, nobody, we're not canceling people here on Must Increase, man. You're free to speak. So freedom of speech, you know, us, Elon Musk, we're all into this freedom of speech thing. So,
yeah. Hey, thankfully he put my Twitter page back up. So thanks, Elon.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. You and Donald Trump and the Babylon Bee and all of them.
Yeah. Hey, so are you okay with being reinstated this week? I was like, I guess. Yeah, that's fine. So
it's good. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, so yeah, it's good to have you here. And but before we get too political, we're gonna shift gears and we are gonna talk. Move to our segment of stuff we like. So here we go.
Stuff we like.
Yeah, that's right. Stuff we like, featuring for those of you wondering, the glorious vocals of Matthias Gleb himself. And so today, in honor of that, we are actually going to give Matt the floor for the entire Stuff We Like segment. And so, Matt, what do you got? What stuff do you like?
Yeah, sorry to start the episode off so crazy, because what I'm about to talk about is something very serious on Stuff We Like. We just recently had a pastor to our church named Bill Prater. He was a pastor, I think, for 20 years, and now his son pastors the church he was a previous pastor of. And now he gets the opportunity to still minister at that church, but also to travel around and to talk about specifically something that he and his family went through. For him, losing his son, and obviously his son was married and had kids. And so he wrote a book, and he kind of preached through that book as he was here this couple weeks ago. But the book is entitled How to Get Through What You'll Never Get Over. And I want to recommend that to any of your listeners. Once again, that's How to Get Through What You'll Never Get Over by Bill Prater. And he took the time Sunday morning. He pretty much preached half of that book, and Sunday night preached the rest of it. But just so solid. Just the story of it is the very beginning, the intro of the book talks about his son. It's entitled TJ. And his son was just a young man at the very beginning of his adult life, had several kids. And he says in the book that he got a phone call one night from TJ's wife, saying that he was just killed as he was working on his vehicle in their front yard. The truck slipped.
Wow.
And ended his life. So just a very sudden, sad loss. And so he talks about the pain of that. Obviously, no parent should ever have to bury their child. It's hard enough for a child to bury their parent, but that should never be the other way around. And so I just wanted to mention the five chapters that he has very quickly, and I'll say something from each of those chapters. But the first chapter says something to the effect of, you don't have to get over it. You don't have to get over it. You know, a lot of people say, hey, you'll get over it. Time, and you'll get through it. You know, you don't. But he said, you can't get over this. It's not possible. You know, when people sprain their ankle, they can get over their sprain. But when you cut off a leg, you're not going to get over that. Your leg's gone forever. You know, that loss is never going to come back. And he says, so when something's taken from you, when you lose that family member, you don't have to get over it because they're gone. And you're going to have that feeling of loss all the time. And that's normal. That's okay. Don't feel like you have to get over it. God doesn't expect us to get over it. He gave us that for a purpose. So anyway, that was the first chapter. The second one has the thought of, you can get through it. All right, you're not you don't have to get over it, but you can get through it. And for a lot of serious things that happen, that's our whole life. It'll take us our whole lives to get through it. But God knows what we can handle, and I just preached that to the teenagers this past Sunday, 1 Corinthians 10:13. He knows what we're able to bear, and He's always created a way of escape. And that's kind of the thing we told the teens. Every pain, every trial is coupled with an escape route, is coupled with a release valve, where we're not going to crumble, we're not going to be overcome by this. God has always promised to give us a way of escape. And then he also points out in the third chapter, I believe it is, that God is sovereign. And actually, I just noticed that the message in the chapters don't line up. So if I say chapters, not exactly the same as his message. But God is sovereign. He is not obligated to live up to our expectations or to explain himself. God does not have to do the things that we expect him to do. He does not have to explain himself ever, because he is God. He can do what he wants with his creation. And he never has to tell us why. He never has to give us a reason. And he never has to do what we want him to do. He is sovereign. But that does not have to stop you from asking those questions. And that he says that later on in a different point of the passage or the message. But the fourth thing he says is that God can use pain for our good and his glory. Pain produces a deeper relationship with God. Pain conforms us into the image of Christ, and pain is permitted so that we can turn around and help others. The biggest pain that I've had in my life was the loss of my dad. And I've had a couple other people in my circle of my world that have lost their parents. And that's something that I could speak to, that I've been through it, and that I'm going through it, that we are spending our second Christmas this year without my dad. And it's the second season where I've got to be strong for my family and comfort my mom. And even just with myself, know that it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to not be able to get over it. But because of those pains, it has brought our good and his glory. And the last thing he mentions in his sermon, that I'm sure he mentions in his book as well, but that is, it is okay to ask why. It's okay to ask God why. Ask knowing that you may never get that answer that you're expecting or that you're wanting, but it's okay to ask. Again, not something that he said, but something I preached to our teens is Paul asking God to remove his thorn in the flesh 3 times. God, remove it. God, remove it. God, remove it. And God never removed it. He did not give Paul what he wanted, but he gave Paul what he needed. And that was grace that was sufficient. And that was his strength in Paul's weakness. So it's okay to ask why, but just do everything you can in your life to avoid bitterness. That God is sovereign. And focus on, in your life, don't let whatever happened just deplete your whole life. Focus on what you still have. I still have my mom. I still have my siblings. So if I allow my dad's death to get me down and I can't enjoy Christmas or I'm just sad all the time, if I allow that bitterness to creep in, I cannot be a joy and a love and encouragement to those that are around me still. They're not gone yet. So love them. Don't allow bitterness to take over. And the last thing he said was God's grace is sufficient. And I heard it illustrated one day as parents who are about to go on a train ride and they gave their child the ticket to the train. And the kid said, why do I have to carry this around? They said, well, you don't need it yet, but you're going to need it later. So they go to get the car. The kid's like, I got the ticket. Well, you don't need the ticket yet. You're going to need it later. So we get to the door of the train station. You don't need it yet. But when you finally get into the train and you took your seat and the guy came down and asked for your ticket, okay, now you're going to need to hand over your ticket. You had grace the whole time. Sometimes we don't understand. We have God's grace all the time. But, man, sometimes we need it a little bit more. Sometimes that's really when it kicks in. And I've got to experience God's grace in my time of loss. And as Pastor Prater illustrated so well and talked about that, he got to experience God's grace even in the loss of his young son. So stuff we like, check it out. If I think you can order it from Striving Together Publications. I think it's $5.
Okay.
I would encourage everybody to buy a copy for your loved one who may be going through something or buy it for yourself knowing that one day it's coming. We're all going to have pain. We're all going to have loss. If you're not in it right now, you're going to be or you have been. So it's kind of a resource for everybody.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you took the time to kind of share that, break that down. Because, yeah, around the time that this episode's going to be released, we are into kind of the Christmas season. And that is, you know, the most wonderful time of year, sure. But it for those who have had any type of loss, and of course, in the case of yourself, Matt, with your dad, and then in the case of Pastor Prater, the author of this book, with his son, we're referring to death. But there's other types of loss out there as well that people have to think about. You know, maybe some type of relationship that ended. You know, a split up, a divorce, something like that. A lot of times, that is when people have to kind of reconcile with that, and they remember that and kind of remember the pain of, oh, things are different. You know, another thing I thought of too, because you kind of talked about bitterness. I think this could also be applied to people that, you know, in the past they've experienced some type of maybe abuse, not necessarily could be physical abuse, but maybe some type of emotional abuse or verbal abuse from somebody. It's just kind of like all of that can really, why would God let me go through that? Why would he let me endure that? And something I really like and something that honestly, I don't know. And how I was taught, if you will, you talk about the sovereignty of God. That was one of the points that he made. And something that, I don't know, I just kind of remember from a lot of what I was taught growing up and whatnot, what leaned a lot into that. Yes, God is sovereign, and it's true. And he has the right to do or to allow whatever with no explanation. But what I remember being taught was, don't you dare ever, because of that, don't you dare ever question God and ask him why. But that couldn't be further from the truth. All you got to do is take a look at the book of Job, and you see all that Job went through and how Job did. The bulk of the book is Job questioning, what is going on? But it says throughout the book of Job, and all of this, Job sinned not. He did not sin. Never one time was Job. Now, God has his moment with Job where he does say, hey, I'm God, and I don't have to explain myself. But never one time does God look at Job and say, you have sinned, you have done wrong. In other words, God's big enough, I've heard it put this way, God's big enough to handle your questions. He's big enough to handle your temper tantrum. There's nothing wrong with you questioning and wondering why, but you have to, again, on the flip side, like you said, rest in the sovereignty of God and know there may never be an answer, or if I do get an answer of why, it may not be for a while. And so, I think that's a good reminder as we head into kind of like this season and stuff. What's that?
Yeah, just a final layer of that. Like you used Job. I believe Pastor Prater used the example of David. He said, you can't read Psalms without saying lots of questions from David. How long, God? Where are you,
God? Oh, yeah.
Why didn't you do, and David is the man after God's own heart. And so Psalms is filled with those questions. And again, just to throw this out there, it allows us to pour our hearts out to God. It allowed David to get in a deep relationship, worship of God. But the dangerous part is persistently demanding an answer. That's the dangerous part.
Yep.
Persistently demanding an answer. When you got to just rest in his grace. And something else just to throw out there very quickly is, you better nail down the truth you know about God. And you got to nail that down before tragedy strikes, before there are times of loss. Because if you don't, everything that you've ever known is going to be put up for question. You're going to put it on, you think of a detective who has this board and they're trying to figure out where the murder is. Everything you've ever thought to be true is going to be up there on the board and saying, okay, is this real? Does God love me? Is his word true? Did he truly die for me? And you're going to put everything up there that you question. So get everything you know nailed down in your heart and mind right now through God's word. And so when tragedy does strike, you can lean on that truth. And yes, you have questions, but you're able to, your feelings will fluctuate, but his truth won't. So get that settled.
Yeah. Well, again, I think a little bit different than the type of content we're usually going to cover here, but I think really timely for those who might be, again, this is the time of year where that, if nothing else, you remember that loss that you may have experienced, the death of a family member, whatever it may be. I'm glad you brought that here as the stuff we like. And like I said, I'm not going to share anything for stuff we like because I wanted you to have as much time there to go over that because I do think it's such a powerful, thought that you shared there. And we're going to skip over the questions as well. However, we are now going to shift again, and we're going to continue the topic that we started to discuss last time. And last time we really highlighted kind of the problems, if you will, that come that are kind of coming from this generation, but it's not isolated, like we said, to just one generation. So really it's just the problem that all generations, all people have with being addicted to their screens and to their phones and to technology. I was talking about kind of these three layers of that, where there's distraction, detraction, and then destruction. As far as how that, again, I talked about a little bit how that plays out, but I did want to emphasize this as well. That can play out in any capacity of your life, not just your screens and technology in particular. For example, you see this happen very, unfortunately, all too commonly with maybe people and men in particular, but women as well, and their career. They get so focused on their career, their job, or pastors out there, sorry to say it, but also your church and your ministry becomes all consuming of you to where, maybe at first it's a distraction. It's, hey, I can't break away from the office because, I have these last few emails I got to deal with, or last few projects, tasks I got to get done, or meetings are running over, to where now it becomes detraction, to where you say, now I'm spending, 10, 12 hours a day at work, and I'm not coming home, and maybe not coming home when I should, or I'm coming home late, or when I am coming home, I'm completely depleted of energy, whatever. And so now that focus on career, or like I said, ministry even, becomes such a distraction that it's detracting from the things that matter the most. I've heard it put it this way. Good things become bad things when those good things take the place of the best things. And for anybody, the best things in your life is obviously your family, your wife, your kids, your spouse, all that. And so you see that. And then unfortunately, it can lead to, that's where it leads to destruction. A family or a spouse that feels completely disconnected from you because you're so focused in on, you know, your work and so forth. And that can lead to all kinds of complications in a relationship, in a marriage, in a family and whatnot. And so understand that these principles that we're talking about, really, technology is just kind of the latest iteration of the problem. Human nature is always, really, we're almost always looking for a distraction, if you will. Something's going to distract us, whether it's like our phones, but phones or anything else, but phones and screens in particular, that seems to be the kind of main culprit, if you will, of the day. And so, yeah, Matt, but I do want to kind of start to shift towards a little bit more of a what can we do? I don't want to just be those guys who are like, oh, well, the stupid kids and their phones and give all the problems. I want to talk a little bit about maybe solutions. So I'm gonna turn it over to you, and I know you have a few thoughts as we kind of drift into what can we do about this?
Yeah, literally, when you gave your alliterated outline, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's the Baptist in me. You got to be alliterated.
I've won the counter, if you don't mind, just about how we can. Just some reminders. But I think just as being a dad to my 2-year-old son, a husband to my amazing wife, and a kid to my mom and to my family, not to get back on this, but just experiencing the loss, knowing that there could be regret in your mind. My first thing to throw out there is live in the moment. You're not going to have these years back. Mm. You're not going to be able to replay Christmas 2022 again. So live in the moment the best you can. Anything that's on your phone can literally wait. You can see it later.
Yep.
So live in the moment.
I got to interject there. I got to say this. I have dealt, again, this is, I've seen it with all generations. I've been guilty of it myself. How many times do we get a text, an email, whatever it may be, and we get that notification on our phone, and why ask ourselves, why do I have to deal with this now? Why? Is this truly urgent? Is it literally, if I do not, you know, process this, reply to this right now, is that going to make a difference? And the answer 99% of the time is no. It doesn't matter. It's not truly urgent. I think there's value to having a sense of urgency about certain things, but we've made so many things urgent to where it's almost like, if you've ever watched the Office, they've got urgent memos, but they talk about how Michael Scott always sends out memos marked as urgent. So then they have to have this tier of urgent 1, urgent 2, urgent 3. And so it's a funny moment that illustrates that when everything's urgent, nothing is. And so, if you think that, oh no, it's something I have to get back to now, ask yourself, is it really? Because your answer is probably not. And so I have to interject there that about being present. Your phone can be in the other room. Your notifications can be turned off to where you can't hear it, all that stuff, and it's going to be fine. So anyways, Matt, sorry to interrupt your thought, but I had to interject that.
No, that's great. Live in the moment. And this is a small thing that I think goes a long way for people, is look people in the eye. Your phone may go off in front of them. A lot of guys have the Apple Watches, and the guys on my campus who do, it's very nice that they can just look at it real quick. But if we're in the middle of the conversation and they look down, I just stop talking because I know they're looking at their phone and I'm going to get a and they have no idea what I just said.
Yep.
So live in the moment. And coupled with that, look people in the eye. And man, I've lost a lot of respect for people because they just won't listen. And, you know, we're just trying to have a conversation and you're not even going to look at me. The flip side of that is true. When you can give some of your total comprehension, and you're right in front of them, and you're not turning your body away from them, but you're giving them everything you have at that time. It goes a long way for people. Lets them know that you love them, that you care for them, and that you matter. So I don't know if you want to input anything there.
I have to say, you know, I do. I have the Apple Watch. I do like the Apple Watch. I love having the smartwatch, whatever, for multiple reasons. It's got a lot of good functionality. But I do remember that when I first got, you know, a smartwatch that would notify me whenever I got, you know, text or whatever. I remember it was like the first couple days I was wearing it. I'm sitting there and I'm having a meeting with someone at my desk. And my phone, it kept buzzing. I mean, I had everything pushing to it. I had messages and emails and everything. And I, you know, it's just, well, my wrist is buzzing. So it's just a natural reaction to look at it. And the guy finally said, because he thought I was checking my watch of like, hey, because this is before they were kind of mainstream. So he thought I'm just checking the time. And he finally said, he said, do you have somewhere to be? Like, is this meeting running too long? I was so embarrassed. And so now I really have, first of all, and I've talked about this before, but I will interject this, turn your notifications off. You do not need, that's another question to ask. Do I need to deal with this now? Probably not. And really ask yourself this, do I really need to be notified? Like, does my phone or my watch need to buzz, ding, for example? And this is the one I always push. Well, actually two. First of all, do you really need to be notified about social media notifications as far as someone liked your photo, someone commented? And the answer is absolutely not. And if you think you can make an argument against that, bring it on. You do not need social media notifications at all. So go into your phone and turn those off. Secondly, and this is where I get a lot of pushback, but do you need them for your email? And the answer is almost always no. You do not need to be getting emails pushed to you in real time whenever they're sent. Your email inbox can be checked periodically throughout the day, and you do not have to in real time. If anybody out there expects you to reply in real time to an email, I don't want to have a personal nor professional relationship with that person, because that is not how it's designed to work. That's never how it was intended to work. And so I always get pushback on that one in particular, but you don't need to get those notifications, because yes, there's something about whether it's a phone, getting notifications on the phone or getting notifications on your watch, smart device, whatever it is, reducing those notifications. And then if you do, like I said, I'm still going to get text notifications on my watch, but I've had to train myself. Like if I'm in a conversation with somebody, it can buzz and buzz and buzz. Like I literally, as I'm talking, it just buzzed, but I've trained myself to, nope, I'm not going to look at that because we're in a conversation. And yeah, this idea in general about eye contact is so good, because I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and I found myself, you know, when we're in conversation, a lot of times, you know, we maybe look away to think, you know, while we're talking, you know, or whatever, because there does come a point where, you know, locked in creepy eye contact can get a little uncomfortable. But I kind of caught myself. I felt like I was maybe looking away too much. And so I said, no, you know what? No, as I continue this conversation, I'm going to be more intentional, especially when you're listening, about just looking in their eyes and meeting eye contact. Because it really, especially, like I said, when you're talking, sure. Like I said, it's maybe a little more natural to look away and feel like you're, oh, I'm thinking about this or whatever. But especially when you're listening, just looking in their eyes. And again, like you said, it really communicates a lot. Like, yep, I hear you. I'm listening to you. I care. And so, a lot of good thoughts there. I love that you said that about eye contact, because it seems so simple, but yet, you watch yourself and you probably, there's a good chance you're not great, and other people that you're talking with aren't great at it either. It's something we really have to retrain and be intentional about.
Yeah. The third thing I was thinking about, sticking to the alliteration, but is we've already touched on it, but limit your intake, and you can do that by the filters. Or you can do that by setting up an amount of time and maybe giving your spouse the password or a friend, or just setting it up somewhere so that you can't change it so easily. But limit what you take in. And coupled with that is be aware of where you're at. Do you need to be on your phone at that moment? And then what are you teaching other people? And I only say that because I have something nagging in my mind. But you know, in church, if I ever have to come into the auditorium late or leave a little bit early or whatnot, or even just turn around because someone sneezed or whatever, you know, I'm just nosy. But turning around and seeing a parent scrolling through Facebook on their phone, like, you're only sitting down for 30 to 40 minutes after we sang, after we had announcements or whatever. You have to listen to a message for literally half an hour. And if you can't sit there and limit your intake just to hear from God's word, and your kids are watching, there's no doubt they're going to be addicted to their screens. And you can't ever argue that one day. There's no, and obviously there's going to be reasons for them not to care about God or to care about church, because you don't care, because you're not looking. So why are you even coming? So find out a place to limit your intake. Church, at your work, are you giving your employees the work day that they're paying for? In your family time, wherever there is something else happening, live in that moment and limit your intake, even when it's your free time. Okay, I think we can both attest.
It's good.
There's not a lot of healthy things that we can do on our phones for more than 2 hours at a time. Even if it's playing games, if it's watching a movie, there's nothing that's going to be helping us by just going through your phone. Man, pick up a book. I challenged myself last year, and I need to get back into it this next year. Just read instead of watching mindless videos. Like, I love watching hunting videos, but seeing Bubba kill a huge 12-point buck is not going to help me at all. All it is going to do is make me sin by being jealous and trying to think of a new strategy to waste more time in the woods to not see that 12-point buck. But, man, do everything you can to limit your intake. And I don't know where we're at on time, so I'll just throw out the last one real quick. But the last one is to lean on His word. Lean on God's word. And I just think of Philippians 4:8 that says, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, pure, lovely, of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. And there's not too many apps that you can click on, not too many videos that you can watch, not too many games that you can play, where you can filter through God's word in that verse, Philippians 4:8, and that's truly going to help you. Yes, I think it's totally okay to have some entertainment as long as it's limited, but when you hand that phone or that computer or that screen over to that child, how many things are they going to be truly getting that we can run through the filter of Philippians 4:8 that's not going to be destroying or being detrimental to their mind and to their future. So to give a child a phone with nothing holding back, with limits or filters or whatever, is you handing them a grenade and not expecting something bad to happen. You're handing them a fire and pieces of wood and gas and saying, don't get burned. So parents, don't be lazy in just handing it over and being done. But if you're going to do it, you better stay on top of it and don't ever let it slack until they're out of your house. Because parents, if you remember how stupid you were at 18 and 16 and 15 and 12, that doesn't change with your awesome kid. It's still going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I would go as far to say, and you know, this is going to upset, you know, as particularly the teenagers out there, but really does your kid need a phone? First of all, and when do they need a phone? I mean, it's not for me to make that call for other parents, if you will, but you know, these kids that are getting phones and iPads and maybe, I guess iPod's not really a thing anymore, but they're getting handed these devices, these tablets in particular, it's typically tablets as young as like age 3, as far as like they are given a designated device for them. I don't know. I mean, like I said, don't get me wrong. Like my daughter, she's 5. Sometimes she wants to, you know, watch a show on the iPad or play a game on it. Like, it's not like she never does, but I don't know. I'm just like, man, really handing a device over to a kid that young, even if you can lock it down, why? You know, really ask yourself, do I really need to be doing that? And yeah, Matt, like you said, even if they are of age, because I mean, look, I get it. When my daughter gets to be of the age where maybe she's, you know, on sports teams and traveling and, you know, or anything like that, or going to youth activities, look, I'm going to want to be able to keep track of her with a phone. I know that, not just for convenience, but for safety and security. I see the value in that. But like you said, for you to hand a device to a young person that's completely unfiltered and completely and has no parental controls on it at all, that is not only dumb, it's incredibly irresponsible, and you have no excuse because, like we said in the last episode, this is built into iPhones in particular now. iPhones, iPads, they literally have parental controls built in, and they're actually really good. All you got to do is go into the settings app and play around a little bit. It's not hard to figure out. You can block adult content. You can put time restrictions. You can even block certain types of apps from being downloaded. You can go as far as block the internet altogether to where they can't even get on. And if you have to at least look into this stuff, it's not hard to figure out. And then I'm going to say this for as we round out this episode here, I'm going to give a challenge to parents as far as and adults as far as their phone, as far as talking about this idea of really all of it, but in particular your one of your points there about, you know, not letting yourself, like I said, get distracted or whatever, is I really ask the question, like, if it's a problem to you, if it's becoming a distraction, something that, you know, for example, I'm really scrolling social media all the time. I ask the question, why not consider deleting those apps from your phone? I'm not saying abandon social media, get off social media, but you know what? You can access the big three, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can access all of those through a web browser. And as far as scrolling and checking. So why do you really need the app? You could delete the app from your phone. And if you really get the urge to check it, well, at least now there's that extra step of going to your web browser or logging in. If you make it harder, we talked about a long time ago, that book Atomic Habits, to stop a bad habit. If you make it harder, then you're less likely to do it or to do it as often as you have been. So, I say go as far as deleting apps that, like, I get a lot of pushback for this. I argue that you don't necessarily even need your email app on your phone. You can delete it and you can check it on your computer, or on your iPad or something like that. So, anyways, a lot of good stuff here. And I think a lot of good content here, Matt, about what we can do, not just pointing out problems, but giving a few solutions. And so, Matt, any parting words here as we close out today's episode?
Yeah. If, like you said, I'm kind of keep honing in on parents, but hey, parents, it's a battle worth fighting, because I've been on the flip side of seeing how some lives have been destroyed, mingled, messed up. It's worth it right now to fight that battle. And I have parents in my youth group who have fought that battle. And I have several kids who don't have phones, who are 15, 16 years old. Can I be honest? My unofficial study, they are way happier than all the other kids.
Yeah.
They love the Lord more.
Yep.
I can't see their heart, but just the fruit of their lives. So I'm not saying that I'm not going to give my kid a phone. I don't know when, but it does not hurt them to not have a phone. And it's worth fighting the argument and the crying and the being upset and their partial anger with you. I think by the time they hit 25 or whatever, they're going to turn around and be able to say, hey, thank you so much, because I could have gotten myself in a lot of trouble. So thanks for keeping me from that. So it's worth it. And it'll be worth it for yourself too, anything that you need to do for yourself.
Yep. I agree. And I can echo that. I mean, some of when I think about people in my life that I know, some of the most miserable or discontent people, coincidentally, they seem to be on their phones all the time. And that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the reason, but it is, again, just an interesting coincidence. I don't think you can go wrong, parents, with greatly, drastically figuring out what you could do to reduce your kids' screen time, or maybe asking yourself, well, do they really need the phone, or at least at this age, do they need it? So great conversation today as we continued and kind of rounded out that topic. And Matt, thanks for being with us. Like we said, we are going to include Matt's content contact information in the show notes, the description. So if you want to connect with Matt directly about any of this or something else, then just reach out. And thanks for joining us. And I always like to remind you, make sure you're subscribing wherever you do listen to podcasts or on our YouTube channel. If you have questions, you can text those to 615-900-4461. That's 615-900-4461. And thanks so much for joining us right here, where we are looking to increase truth and inspire hope in the lives of others. And we'll see you next time right here on the Must Increase Podcast.